I'm going to officially reconvene the formal formal action item. There it goes. The formal action item that we left last night, we entered our formal meeting at in Falls Church at George Mason High School, where we took public comment, and we're going to continue that public comment this morning. And then after that, we will then go back into our workshop to hear the final presentation before we do any voting. So with that, we're going to enter public comment. And the first person that I have signed up is Bob Buchanan. Welcome, Mr. Buchanan.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. My name is Bob Buchanan. I'm a Maryland resident, and as newly elected chair of the All Private Business Board for Economic Development for Montgomery County, as well as the head of the 2030 group, I'm speaking to urge you to adopt the resolution with language in it to open and negotiations with Maryland regarding another river crossing. As a result of yesterday's phenomenal meeting of the Governor, Mayor Bowser, and Senator Mike Miller from Maryland, I think regionalism is here to stay. It's alive and well, and it's really reached a point of awareness and cooperation that I haven't seen before. And it's unfortunate that we need it as badly as we do for our regional economy. One of the things 2030 has been involved in has been the roadmap. How do we get to where we need to be and not be so dependent on the federal government? And we interviewed 35 CEOs of various industries that we wanted to nurture to grow within and not be so federally dependent. They all said one thing. It's the attraction of talent and the retention of talent. And one of the obstacles to retention of talent is our broken transportation system. So the efforts you're doing to work towards that end, the efforts others are doing, I think all stand in good stead. I think the business community, I can speak for Montgomery, I can speak for those people in 2030, the business community is solidly behind another river crossing to alleviate the congestion. 2030 commissioned a group of 45 transportation experts a number of years ago. They all answered our survey on what priorities were needed, only if it would be anonymous because the politics were so great they didn't want to jeopardize their contracts or whatever. But the number one game changer universally responded to was another river crossing. Yes, a sustainable funding for Metro. Yes, connect our corridors better. But make no mistake, a river crossing is the game changer. I think it will also improve our economic development prospects because people will see that the region is doing something proactively that they haven't done before. So let's not let politics stop what we know needs to be done, and I urge you to initiate and stay with it because I think Maryland's going to be receptive now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next person is Brian Falls. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
I should mention if I mispronounce your name, please correct me, but good morning.
Good morning. Let me move that down so I can actually use it. Good morning, Secretary Lane, members of the Commonwealth Transportation Board. My name is Brian Falls. I am the Government Affairs Manager for the Loudoun County Chamber of Commerce. I wanted to talk briefly on two items, item 14, the Potomac River Crossing Resolution, and item 15, the I-66 Memorandum of Agreement. I echo everything Bob just said regarding the river crossing. It will be a game changer. The resolution simply says we should talk to Maryland. It is not a commitment to do anything. It is a discussion. Hopefully that discussion will lead to a commitment to do something, but right now it's only a discussion. We should never be afraid of talking about anything, so we certainly encourage you to pass that resolution. With regard to I-66, we all know that I-66 is a major artery and it's already over capacity and it needs to be fixed. It has been said that the Loudoun County Chamber of Commerce supports the Transform 66 plan. That is a bit of a misnomer. Our position enshrined in a resolution passed by our board of directors in September, and it's a long-standing position, is that I-66 should be expanded from Route 15 to the Roosevelt Bridge. We do support elements of the I-66 transform plan, but we also expected certain conditions that we wanted to see in this agreement. We wanted to see tolling protection for travelers to Dulles Airport, a major economic engine of the county and the region, and a major employer in Loudoun County. We wanted to see the toll revenue reserved strictly for congestion mitigation efforts. The MOA allows toll revenue to be used for operation and maintenance expenses such as insurance on transit. We're a little concerned about that. We expected a short 3 to 5 year timetable to examine the congestion mitigation triggers, which would then, if met, trigger expansion of the road. Right now we have a longer timetable that would trigger a mere assessment of whether we should expand the road. That concerns us greatly. We recognize that the perfect cannot be the enemy of the good. We recognize that this document has the ability to be amended and terminated if necessary. We urge the CTB and the MBTC to be very diligent in administering this document should you go forward with it. Please do not be afraid to amend it if circumstances are changing and things are going awry. I-66 must be fixed for the future of this region. Anything that gets us closer to that is a good step, but we could do a lot more. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Mr. Martin. Next, Joe Vidilich.
Good morning, Mr. Secretary. Joe Vidilich with the Fairfax Chamber of Commerce. Today I want to limit my comments to the Potomac River crossing that you heard Bob Buchanan from the 2030 group said. Spanning the Great Divide, also known as the Potomac River, also known as the Potomac Ocean, has been a long priority for the business community in Northern Virginia. For a lot of times, Maryland has said it's Virginia. For the longest of times, Virginia said it's Maryland. Now the time is upon us. We need to ensure that we are growing as a region. We're not purely looking at the boundaries of one county to another. We're not purely looking at one state or one jurisdiction. The governor, Governor McAuliffe, has been leading this charge to this effect. And it cannot be a this or that moment. Yesterday, 550 business leaders descended on Tyson's Corner, Virginia, to hear the governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia, the Senate president of Maryland, and the mayor of the District of Columbia talk about regionalism. Regionalism is thriving in our community. We need to do something that embraces this. And the resolution you have before you simply begins the dialogue. Governor Mike Miller is the longest-serving senator president in Maryland's history. He's also the longest-serving Senate president in our nation's history. He talked about increasing Potomac River crossing capacity and spanning the Great Divide. The American Legion Bridge upgrades that has been announced and has been discussed is a great step. Increasing capacity on that bridge to the I-270 spur in Maryland will go a long way. But as I mentioned earlier, it's not a this or that moment. We also need new Potomac River crossing capacity for vehicular and transit capacity in points different than the American Legion Bridge for a number of avenues. One, as Bob said, it unlocks our regional economy. It supports Dulles Airport's future growth and mobilization as a true port of goods, services, and people, and most importantly for national security reasons. If the American Legion Bridge fails, no matter how much more capacity we put on that bridge, it fails and we are at a crush point in this region. I need not tell you where an undisclosed location is, but if we need to go to places, we need people and national security to get out of this region, the bridges that connect us will also unite us. People often say, if you build it, they will come. The Chamber is very concerned of the opposite. If you don't build it, they won't come. We need to be a thriving hub of economic activity. We need to be a resource and a region for the world. We need the capacity to address the people, the personnel, the goods and services that flow through our area. Regionalism is alive and well in the National Capital Region. Let us not be closed-minded, and let's have this conversation with Maryland to address increased Potomac River Bridge crossing capacity. Thank you, Mr. Secretary.
Thank you very much. Nancy Smith.
Good morning. Nancy Smith with the Northern Virginia Transportation Alliance. First, in regards to I-66 outside the Beltway, the Alliance applauds VDOT and this board for developing and moving forward on a bold solution that will help address today's demands in that corridor, but also accommodate the future growth that we are projected to see occur primarily in the western parts of our region. So thank you for moving that project forward. In terms of I-66 inside the Beltway, the Alliance does support tolling as well as investing in transit improvements. But in addition to increased transit capacity in the corridor, we feel additional lane capacity is needed from the outset, not in 10 years or more after tolling begins. Instead, we believe that toll revenues should be dedicated to widening upfront, and that widening should occur from the outset so that those corridor users that are paying the tolls have the assurance that the tolls they are paying are going to investments that immediately improve their travels, not just during the tolled peak periods, but 24/7 on the off-peak and the weekends. As the 2012-2013 66 multimodal study showed, the multimodal packages that add a lane in both directions actually do the most to reduce congestion and improve vehicle and transit travel times in the corridor. So why are we waiting another decade or more to do what studies show will help achieve the best results? Given the importance of the legal framework that's before you today, we ask that you take your time and thoroughly weigh the MOA before voting on it. Now, finally, turning to the Potomac River Crossing Resolution before you today, we urge you to support that resolution and support the comments that you've heard on that subject previously. Governor McAuliffe has noted as recently as yesterday about his concern if something would happen to the American Legion Bridge, and that we can't wait 5, 10, or 20 years to do something to address our Potomac River crossing capacity needs. The governor is absolutely right. We cannot wait another 5 years to address these needs for our region. We also agree that there is no single solution to our regional mobility needs. And as you know, the recent Potomac River crossing study did not evaluate a single solution or any solutions to these problems. That is why the first step must be to have discussions with Maryland and DC and carefully consider and study all of our Potomac crossing needs, including additional bridge capacity. Fixing the American Legion Bridge by adding a lane or extending hot lanes is not enough. Even a fixed American Legion Bridge could fail or have something happen to it. The loss or serious long-term disabling of the American Legion Bridge due to either a major homeland security event or other traffic disaster would be catastrophic for our region. And that's why constructing a new bridge to the west is essential. In the security world, they call this redundancy. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Bob Chase.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Northern Virginia has the nation's most congested highway network, not for lack of effective solutions, but for the failure to adopt those solutions, or in many cases, rationalizing that lesser alternatives are better than nothing. Seek to widen I-64 on Hampton Roads, they say, when can you start? Seek to widen I-66 in Northern Virginia, and they say, not so fast. Better than nothing solutions may slow congestion's increase, but in the long run, congestion gets worse and real solutions more expensive. With the current I-66 inside the Beltway proposal, peak period to peak direction traffic flow will undoubtedly improve, while reverse peak midday, evening, weekend congestion most likely will get much worse for another decade or more. Modeling results are encouraging, but modeling HOV, transit, and tolling is extremely difficult with any degree of accuracy. The issue isn't tolling or transit investment, but how soon widening can be achieved. Peak tolling and transit investment are warranted, but the current proposed delayed widening for a decade or more delays widening for a decade or more, and as you heard last night, Arlington is still fundamentally opposed to any widening. In the years before HB 2313, CTB members frequently complained that legislators were kicking the well-documented need for new transportation funding down the road. Yet this proposal kicks the well-documented need for widening this road down the road, not to the next governor, but to his or her successor, and restricts their ability and flexibility to widen the road. Does anyone seriously believe that most Arlington residents oppose widening? Those Arlington officials opposed to widening are the same who supported the streetcar. Out of touch on the streetcar, out of touch on widening. A better approach is setting aside some toll revenue for widening from the outset and widening I-66 inside and outside concurrently. Senator McAuliffe said yesterday a greater sense of urgency is needed on I-66 and other issues. Postponing widening for a decade or more fails that standard. Since the main obstacle is political, Governor McAuliffe should meet with the new Arlington board. President Nixon went to China. Governor McAuliffe should go to Arlington. This is an important complex issue that merits additional discussion, including whether a 40-year commitment and formula should be approved with only a few days' consideration and discussion. Some say the perfect should not be the enemy of the good. However, taking a bit more time on this proposal can make it better and do more good for more people. I hope you will not rush to judgment and will allow more time to improve this project. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McKinnon. Stuart Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary, members of the Commonwealth Transportation Board. I testified on I-66. I'm Stuart Schwartz with the Coalition for Smarter Growth. I testified on I-66 last night, and I won't go into depth on that other than to say that we support the MOA, but would like to see the triggers adjusted to 45 miles per hour and to remove the half-hour shoulders you added on either side of the tolling. Regarding the previous speakers, they apparently don't believe in the science of induced traffic, that it is a very real problem. They apparently think we can widen Constitutional Avenue in D.C. There is no place for these cars to go. If you build it, they will come on a wider road. That's why your combined transportation demand management, transit, HOV solution is the best solution for that corridor. And I get a little tired of the Arlington bashing. Arlington has probably done more to relieve traffic congestion in Northern Virginia than any other jurisdiction in Northern Virginia. Their transit-oriented development has sited millions of square feet of development, tens of thousands of housing units in locations where their vehicle trips and vehicle miles traveled are lower than anywhere else in Northern Virginia. And they have, in the process, maximized transit, walking, and biking. That is a regional transportation solution. Transit-oriented development, which is the regional consensus in Region Forward, is the regional transportation solution. Not what I'm hearing, which is a 1950s, can we please build rings of outer beltways and widen every road? We have to change our land use to do so in a more sustainable way. We're not alone in this. The CEO of Marriott wants to move to a metro station. There's two office buildings out by Westfield, which have lost $167 million in value, 62% of their value, because the demand isn't there for sprawling office parks. 84% of our office development is within a quarter-mile walk of Metro. Responding to Mr. Buchanan, we do care about the regional economy. We do care about being competitive. That means we should maximize great placemaking and transit-oriented development to attract these companies, to retain the millennials and the next generation creative employees. And we should do our transportation smart in a demand management way like we're talking about. In terms of the Potomac Bridge, you have a letter from Fairfax and Montgomery. How often do you see the 100% of their members, including the Republicans and Democrats, sign a joint letter saying, basically, the American Legion Bridge is our top priority? Your own study found that the American Legion and the Roslyn Tunnel were the top great needs. I would ask that your resolution be amended to reflect that just 5% of the commuters that were measured were U-shaped commuters, those who would be in those outer areas who might use the bridge. Anyone else who crosses in an L-shaped manner is likely to end up on the same radial traffic just on the other side of the river. We'll just mix the plates around, but they'll sit on 270, or they'll sit on Route 7, or the dullest toll road in traffic. No, fix what we've already got and make Metro a top priority. Lastly, on the Homeland Security, I am a Navy veteran. I'm a retired Navy. I think it's almost demagogic to keep raising that, and is unsubstantiated by the facts. There is no incident in the risk assessments, it would say we'd have to do this sort of massive evacuation that they imply. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Dennis Drinkard? Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Thank you. I've got copies of the presentation. There's only 10, so an opportunity to
share. We'll make sure everybody gets copies. Yes, sir.
I'm Dennis Drinkard, and I'm an independent business person with Long and Foster Real Estate doing business in Virginia, Maryland, and D.C. I'm here today speaking on behalf of the Committee for Dulles. I'm a vice president there and incoming chairman for 2017. Last night, Anita Grazier spoke on the I-66 thing. I'm not going to mention that any further. But in terms of the Potomac River Crossing, the Committee for Dulles supports the Potomac River Crossing resolution. We think that talks with the state of Maryland of additional Potomac River crossings are very important. Our reason for the support include the following. Improvements to the American Legion Bridge and construction of the new Western Potomac River crossings are essential to ensuring the region's global competitiveness and the future success of Dulles Airport. The choice is not either to upgrade the American Legion Bridge or to build a new Western Crossing. Both are essential to improve access to communities and promote job creation throughout the region. Northern Virginia's economy is a regional economy, not a collection of local economies. Its success is dependent on being able to attract workers from and provide goods and services to all parts of the capital region. A new Western Bridge crossing is a priority for increased regional competitiveness, quality of life, and security. The 1998 VDOT study and a 2013 private study using Metropolitan Washington COG traffic and land use projections show that the new crossing would carry in excess of 100,000 vehicles daily and provide significant relief to the American Legion Bridge. Other corridors on both sides of the Potomac. There's no single solution to the challenges of the Potomac River crossing, but the need is urgent and discussions need to begin now. We strongly urge the CTB to endorse the resolution recommending the Secretary of Transportation to reach out to the state of Maryland and to discuss and move forward on construction of new crossings and the expansion of the existing connections. Thank you for
the time.
Thank
you very much, sir.
Okay.
Josh Viverich. Good morning. And if I mispronounce that, please correct me. I apologize.
Good morning. It's Josh Viverka.
Well, I was way off.
Yeah. It was probably my handwriting.
Thank you for being here, sir.
Northern Virginia Association of Realtors, Government Affairs Director. I'm here representing the Northern Virginia Association of Realtors, who has, we have 11,000 members throughout the region. And I'm here to comment on both the additional crossings on the Potomac River as well as I-66 inside the Beltway. MVAR considers transportation one of our top priorities. It's important for sustained regional prosperity as well as for the continued growth of the real estate market. You know, our members are realtors. They talk to people moving into and within the region every day. And one of the primary concerns is always transportation. You know, we believe that improvements on the American Legion Bridge are very important, and as well as construction of new Western Potomac River crossings. There are communities that are not connected out there, and they need additional capacity to cross the river. It's important for homeowners' quality of life. It's a quality of life issue for us. So the choice is not either or. We do want to see the resolution that the CTB endorses recommend both studying the improvements to the American Legion Bridge as well as Western crossing of the Potomac. Briefly on I-66, NVAR is not taking a position on tolling on there, but we do believe that additional lane and transit capacity is necessary. I travel I-66 40 some miles every day, and I'm going to add to that. And I'm not sure on the studies. People say it's the most congested highway in the region. I believe that. There's need to add capacity, and whatever sensible solutions are available for adding capacity inside the Beltway, we would endorse that. To close, people want to be able to get to work. They want to be able to get to shopping. They want to be able to get to their children's sporting events and school events. And the increased capacity inside the Beltway and to get across the river is very important to our members. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. That is all the signed up, but is there anyone else who would like to speak? Good morning, Mr. Whitfield.
Good morning, sir. I spoke on I-66 last night, inside the Beltway. The only thing I would want to add is that one of the important linkages, and let's face it, we're talking about link networks, is right here at Seminary Road, we see this huge construction going on. I don't know how much it's costing, but it's evident, it's probably $100 million plus. But Route 110 links from 395 near the Pentagon up to Roslyn. And so in making linkages, I would suggest that we study the potential role of 110 in providing linkages to 66 and how that, because it's an alternate route to the Beltway. It's the only alternate route for most people, so that needs to be studied more carefully. And as to transportation options for 66, we're in an era where software is allowing new modes with Uber and Bridge in DC, and I think that there's an opportunity for using technology. I don't, as to the transit improvements on 66, we're not talking about rail improvements, but bus, express bus improvements. I hope to get the folks involved in double-decker buses to come and show you how they can carry up to 100 passengers, and hopefully they'll be here next year. They're producing in Indiana now. But so movement of people, I support the concept of what you're proposing. Obviously, I have objections to the lack of tolling of the reverse commuters. But part of the problem and part of the solution is going to be the expansion of Metro. And we need to have some kind of task force, whether it's appointed by the CTB or whoever. But the expansion of the Metro rail system is going to be fundamental to the future of growth in the Washington area. I personally favor what's called the Broslin Bypass, which would take the connection between the Orange Line near the courthouse to the Blue Line at Arlington Cemetery, because that would help provide linkage between Dulles Airport and Reagan and the Pentagon, Crystal City, Alexandria, Springfield, and vice versa, improve the connectivity of the southern part of our metro area to the Silver Line, Dulles Airport, and Loudoun. So I don't know who's going to lead that charge, but it's certainly more affordable, $2 billion or less, than the $26-plus billion WMATA Metro Momentum Plan. So I hope that sometime next year there'll be some kind of task force to look at what's the best options for Northern Virginia in improving transit.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Any other comments to come before the CTB this morning? Okay, seeing none, then we will go into recess and suspend the formal action item. And I will now call us back into session on the workshop, where we have one final presentation with Mr. Duan Lee, who is with ASCO, who is going to give us a national perspective on hot lanes. Now, let me point out, this is a national perspective. If you want to ask Mr. Lee a specific question about 66, he's a native here, but in terms of his modeling, he's really giving an overview from ASTO's perspective of the success and issues with hot lanes, so not particularly to any particular project. And Mr. Lee, thank you so much for being here this morning.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Secretary and members of the board. My name is Jung Lee, and I serve as policy director for ASTO, which stands for the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials. So we are based in D.C., and we represent all the peer agencies of the Virginia Transportation Department, in that our members are comprised of all the state DOTs around the country, plus those of D.C. And Puerto Rico. And my role here, as the Secretary mentioned, is to just kind of look at where we are as a nation in the deployment and the use of the high occupancy toll lanes. You could describe them perhaps as express lanes. There is this idea of the managed lanes, which I'll start off with. And as the Secretary mentioned, even though I am a graduate of Fairfax High School and the University of Virginia, I am unable to talk about the specifics of this particular I-66 project, though I am very excited about the prospects of improvements along that corridor. So let me start off by saying that, you know, the idea of toll roads, for example, have been around for, at this point, kind of in the modern form of toll roads, three quarters of a century. The idea of HOV, or high occupancy vehicle lanes, have been around for decades, certainly in Virginia as well. But I think what we're seeing now is the idea of being able to more actively manage the conditions and respond accordingly on our expressway system. And that's where this kind of umbrella concept of managed lanes comes in. This is talking about highway facilities where operational strategies can be proactively managed based on the very dynamic nature of the use of expressways. And, you know, perhaps crude, analogy could be that rather than, you know, having a person having to manually switch railroad tracks, you know, we're at a point where we can really instantaneously almost, you know, respond to whatever the demand needs are and, you know, adjust the supply and improve efficiencies accordingly. And so under this family of managed lanes, you can look at, again, kind of the traditional HOV lanes, but what are seen more as priced lanes. So we're looking at more of the variable toll rates based, again, on demand that is enabled by advances in technology, and hot lanes are certainly part of that mix. And there have also been certain specific reservations or access for, you know, expressway lanes based on, you know, vehicle type and the like. And all of these things are all really looking to better manage demand, to allow for more efficient use of the facility by minimizing conflict situations. So I think one longstanding example are the truck lanes on the New Jersey Turnpike, where they bifurcate the car traffic alongside the truck traffic so they don't get mixed. And obviously really utilize any unused capacity that may be available, especially during the peak time. And what this particular chart kind of shows you is that when you look at kind of the left-hand side there, there are the various specific types of managed lanes, but then you can then start looking at mixing the different purposes and scope and arrive at, for example, the hot lanes. It's really a combination of your traditional toll lanes, but obviously with the vehicle eligibilities associated with traditional HOV lanes. And then you have express lanes that allow for bus access, whether in conjunction with, you know, other types of roadway users. There is just a lot of different possibilities to approach this. And all of these types of efforts are really trying to look at, you know, better using the concept of roadway pricing, trying to, you know, inject a bit of market-based effort at, you know, what is the appropriate, you know, cost of using, you know, this type of facility, especially during peak hours. And that can also then, you know, allow commuters and other users to better evaluate, well, if there are other options available in addition to, say, driving alone, hey, maybe I should look into that. And part of the revenues that could be raised from, you know, hot lanes can support those other modes of transportation as well. And there is also just kind of the, again, the efficiency of traditional HOV lanes can be increased, where if it's overutilized, then you can obviously price accordingly to bring it back to kind of the more free flow conditions. If it's underutilized, you can obviously try to include other types of vehicles and increase throughput. When we look back in the George W. Bush administration of the U.S. Department of Transportation, and this happens with every federal administration, there's kind of like this signature policy initiative. So I think with the Obama administration in the last 7 years, we've seen the Tiger grants, which are the discretionary grants that are provided on a competitive basis around the country. And that's one of, they're kind of the key policy levers beyond carrying out the traditional responsibilities of U.S. Department of Transportation. During the George W. Bush administration, that policy lever was this tool called the Urban Partnership Agreements. And this was an effort where seed money was provided at the federal level to various metropolitan areas to look at, you know, demonstrating the viability of the pricing model approach to tolling highways, looking at enhancing transit services, deploying advanced technology, and looking at telecommuting and flexible scheduling type approaches, all in a, you know, kind of the holistic approach to look at how do we best meet the needs of the users, but, you know, also increase the efficiency and accessibility to the entire transportation system. And the four cities that were selected were Miami, Minneapolis, San Francisco, and Seattle. So I'm going to be going into a lot of specific examples of the findings so far from these cities, and then also talk about, in addition, Atlanta and San Diego, because they've also demonstrated some data that shows that, you know, there is synergy that can be gained from use of hot lanes to, say, you know, greater use and ease of use when it comes to mass transit as well. And so, as these four cities demonstrate, federal funds have indeed been used to, you know, do things like purchase express buses or fund the said service along the hot lane corridors, so that not only are you allowing the traditional carpoolers to use these managed lanes or the hot lanes, but also single occupancy vehicle users, should they choose to pay, they can do that, but also expand accessibility to these new lanes to transit users. And that is really crucial, because when you look at kind of the traditional commuting patterns in the U.S., it really hasn't changed all that much over the last 10 years or so. When you look at, it's obviously, drive alone is really kind of the largest chunk of the pie here, and the biggest change really has occurred, say, over the last 5 years, 10 years or so, on the telecommuting side. But when you look at the transit share of commuting, it has remained relatively flat alongside these other modes that are listed here. So, looking at ways to increase the transit share, especially in congested metropolitan areas, could certainly serve positive public policy benefits. And when you look at starting to look at kind of the specifics here, in the last, 5 years or so, 5 to 7 years or so, we are starting to see increase in transit ridership in places where the hot lanes have been implemented, in this case under this umbrella of the Urban Partnership Program from USDOT. You see fairly substantial increases, and I'll, again, get into kind of the more of the details later in my presentation. Another thing that you see is that the number of riders per trip on any given bus in these types of corridors have been fairly robust, at 23 passengers per trip, which is certainly higher than your typical transit ridership share. And there have also been expressed policy efforts to make sure that once the hot lanes are implemented, that folks that may have used transit before, are then looking at driving solo. By, for example, in Denver, there's the I-25 express lanes, where there's a policy that prohibits setting the toll rates below the rate of the bus fare on that corridor as well. So, you know, there is kind of the pricing consideration as well. And when you look at where the new riders are coming from, when you're looking at bus services on these hot lanes, a lot of them really, at least, no city in these examples, more, 45% in Miami is the largest share of other transit users that are coming to use bus services along these hot lanes. The most of the other ones are coming from, driving alone or carpool, or perhaps didn't make the trip. And when you look at the efficiency side of it, based on throughput, it certainly, the example from San Diego shows that compared to the general purpose lanes, so those are your traditional lanes that don't charge tolls, anybody can use it, including single occupancy vehicle drivers, compared to the hot lane throughput, 20%+ enhancements here on the hot lane side during the morning commute. And what the San Diego I-15 corridor has also looked at is, if there tends to be a bit of a bunching in terms of the traffic pattern to certain times of the day, and that is what the traditional idea of a rush hour is, is there a way to spread that out a little bit more, which would then allow more people to travel through that said corridor during any given period of time? And through the use of the pricing, they have been able to do so and move some of the peak volume traffic to some of the quote-unquote shoulder time frames. And what San Diego has also done is that from the very get-go, when they built their hot lanes, they made transit accessibility and the bus service a priority, or one of the key rationale for creating those managed lanes in the first place. And what they do is that, most of their revenues are used for transit services. Only about $430,000 are set aside just for basic operations of the facility, some for highway patrol, but the vast majority of it goes to their inland breeze bus service in that corridor. When you're looking at another of these urban partnership cities is Miami's I-95 Express, and if I recall, that was one of the first of the urban partnership projects that came to fruition, and so there's a bit more of a track record on this one. And the example from South Florida is that, yeah, there has been, you know, a fairly significant increase in total ridership, quite significant actually, from 1,800 folks to in 2009 to 5,500 in 2012. And, you know, the reason may be that, oh, wow, like, you know, the traffic speed certainly has improved, you know, for the general purpose travelers and HOT travelers, where we're talking about, you know, less than 20 miles before the improvements to over 50 miles per hour for the hot lanes and over 30 miles per hour to up to 47 for the general purpose lanes. And this one is actually pretty similar to what you're considering for I-66 outside of the Beltway, in that I-95 HOV lanes that were just single lanes in each direction have been converted to two hot lanes per direction under this effort. And again, going back to why are more, for example, you know, people using this bus service, and you look at the average travel time improvement from 25 minutes to just 8 minutes, and then you're looking at travel speed going from 18 miles per hour to 55. So that gives the incentive for more users to look at this, you know, more viable option of travel. Accordingly, again, the ridership has increased pretty substantially over time, and a lot of the riders really came because of the hot lanes, institution of the tolls, and obviously, again, the service improvements as well. Another metropolitan area that has had an express lane concept implemented for some time is the Twin Cities in Minnesota. So Interstate 394 was their first one, but then they also instituted I-35W project, and the toll rates there have averaged, you know, just a tad bit over $1.70 in the recent years, and the maximum has been going up to 5 to 7 or so. But again, kind of the end result is that there has been increased throughput in this corridor. I think another interesting aspect of this one is the number of violations. The familiarity of the general public with these types of lanes, and given the fact that we're not talking about traditional toll booths but the electronic tags that people may inadvertently get into these lanes, you know, how quickly could they get adjusted or acclimated to understand how the system works? And so they've seen about a 50% reduction in the number of violators that may have inadvertently or inadvertently accessed the lane. So there is just a general increase in awareness among the public of, hey, this is how this type of system works. And as with some of these other demonstration cities, certainly you see the increase in bus speeds and travel time decrease, more utilization, you know, of the traditional park and ride lots as well. And as a sidebar, Minneapolis also looked at creating bus-only lanes in their downtown area, and that's also a form of a managed lane there, and you see the similar types of transit-related benefits over there. Another example is from Southern California. So Los Angeles has been embarking on fairly substantial expansion of their mass transit services, whether it's the heavy transit or your traditional kind of the underground subway system, but also looking at the bus rapid transit lines, and one of them is along Interstate 110, the Silver Line BRT, where thanks to kind of the seed money to see, hey, let's see how this goes, the ridership along that corridor has increased fairly substantially based on this congestion reduction demonstration program. And then once the hot lanes were added, they saw even greater utilization of transit ridership. And when they did the survey of the users, they said, you know, hey, this is great. There are more buses more frequently. But then, oh, I guess buses are a little more crowded now, and so are the parking lots. But that's to be expected, I assume, in a good way. And again, the numbers show that a lot of them are the new riders that many of them, you know, used to drive alone through that corridor. Another interesting example is from the Atlanta area, Interstate 85 northeast of Atlanta. They have instituted and had some growing pains with their hot lane there. And recently they started a pilot program called this Ride Transit Earn Toll Credits Program, because according to kind of the lead in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution article back in March, they said, well, the hated I-85 toll lanes are now the victims of its own success, because so many people are actually starting to use the hot lanes that they're trying to do travel demand management on the hot lanes by telling folks, hey, you know, if you're willing to try our bus service, we'll actually give you this toll credit that you can then use for your future trip on the hot lanes. And I think that's a pretty creative concept. It is still very new and in a pilot basis, so it remains to be seen. Again, instituted just earlier this year in a pilot basis, so you know, it would be interesting to see kind of the dynamics of what's the appropriate balance of, say, doing the solo trip with this toll credit versus taking the bus. But I think it certainly recognizes the fact that, you know, folks are typically pretty practical, right? I mean, they're pretty mode agnostic in that whatever gets them there quickly and conveniently, they'll do that. And I think it's interesting to see further expansion and refinement of the travel options through ideas like this. Another example, kind of, I had alluded a little bit to the Denver I-25 Express project, and out there, they really have placed the bus users on the top of kind of the hierarchy of who gets the priority to the system. And what they've done is they also, let's see here, actually have a transit policy the hot lane policy, where if the travel times on the bus service were to decrease, it would trigger a review of the toll rates and perhaps other policies associated with managing the facilities to make sure that the bus service remains free-flowing at all times. And they've also even looked at, you know, what are the possible issues of service degradation along the corridor. And one of the examples that came up was that one of the exit lanes from the hot lanes was getting congested because of the traffic light at the end of the ramp. So, well, better change that, because perhaps, again, you know, the success of the hot lanes is the extent of the success was perhaps initially unanticipated, that look, you know, this is something that we're going to have to change and make sure, again, keep things free flowing. The last example, or second to last example here I'll provide, is looking at the Seattle area. So this was another project from the Urban Partnership Program, and this was a case where, unlike the most HOV lanes in the area, in the Seattle area, which I understand are quite congested, this one was quite underutilized, so there was a lot of room for growth. And when you look at kind of the years 1 through 3 numbers here, pretty much across the board, however you slice and dice it, the numbers have gone up in terms of the number of trips along the facility. And they've also seen increases in travel speed and decreases in travel lane volumes, including in the general purpose lanes. And the final area-specific example I'll provide is in the San Francisco Bay Area, the I-680S project. It's similar to what I mentioned about the I-15 effort in San Diego, in that a lot of the revenues are really designed to enhance bus service and the toll lanes. In terms of the paying drivers themselves, have been a pretty big success. And I think that's also a pretty interesting area to watch out for down the road, because they have embarked on a very ambitious and robust campaign or effort to convert their HOV lanes to a pretty large network of hot lanes down the road. So really, to kind of conclude the presentation portion here, there's no question that expanding travel options and efficiency to make sure that successful urban areas like here in Northern Virginia continues to remain successful economically and as a place that people want to continue to move to and live in, And the managed lane concept and the hot lanes can provide various benefits that I've mentioned. I think also it would be interesting, kind of like what they're trying to do in the Bay Area, what happens if you can really scale up these types of facilities, not from kind of the piecemeal approach. And granted, I mean, a lot of these are just getting started, but if you are really able to build out a fully fleshed out network, it could provide even greater benefits than, again, kind of the sum of its parts. And that is representative of transportation system writ large. And kind of related to that too, I think it would be interesting to see that going forward, we are going to be able to gain more and more insight as more and more of these hot lanes become established, more data is collected based on the usage and patterns and the like. And I think that can really continue to enhance and better inform public policy debates such as the ones that you're having with I-66. So at this time, I appreciate the opportunity for the presentation and would be happy to take any questions that you may have.
I have one observation and a question that I'd like to run by you.
Sure.
In the public hearing last night, this whole idea, many refer to this as Lexus lanes.
Sure.
And I think lost in that is that, and your data shows this, that while there is choice, the real throughput through the area is a combination of people using the hot lanes and greater flow on the free lanes.
Right.
In other words, if you go back and look at a couple of your slides. So in reality, yes, if there's people, but every one you get off the free lanes that are congested help free up that capacity. Now, where we came home is not in this area. In Hampton Roads, we have an HOV network that, since its implementation in that quarter, the occupants per vehicle have gone down. Hmm. I suppose they can't get below one, but with autonomous vehicles. But it's gone down in the 15 years.
Right.
But what we have seen in other areas is that the single drivers who have an option to pay would use it.
Right.
In other words, it's not so much been encouraging HOV usage, that's part of it, but really what we've seen as the benefit is those single drivers who are willing to pay have freed up the other lanes.
Absolutely.
Because that gives them a choice. So I just want to point that out, but I know a lot of times people try to phrase this, it's only those affluent people that can pay, but there are very big benefits for those who choose to stay, and that's why the whole idea of having a choice is key. So I just was, I've gone through in every example, and all you want to do is point at, well, the hot lanes, but if you look at the whole quarter, that's what you're really trying to achieve. All the throughput has increased.
Absolutely. And so I think, you raise a very good point about this is a longstanding, I think, debate when the hot lanes were really starting to come online in the 90s, this idea of kind of the social equity element and the Lexus lanes and whatnot. And I think what the data is starting to show is that when you look at, I think there was one study fairly recently looking at the brands of cars, literally looking at, is it a Lexus lane? And most of them tend to be kind of your mid-tier brand car, so that seems to be at least the preliminary evidence that, it's the people that really just happen to need it the most. And a great example of that, now that I have a little kid or a toddler, is, the daycare pickup. If you're going to be late, and pay like $50 a penalty, but if you pay $5 or whatever it may be to get there on time, that's going to affect a lot more folks than I think just perhaps the most affluent of the general population. The other point that you mentioned from your home region, obviously looking at underutilized asset anywhere in the transportation system, but certainly on the HOV side, if you can, maintain the free flow speeds but increase accessibility and move more people, yeah, it makes sense to look at it.
Well, I just, I know a lot of times because these become emotional issues, it appears the data is showing us that all people benefit.
Right.
It lifts all boats in terms of throughput through the quarter. Everybody's lives are enhanced. So, and if you go back, it looks like That combined with the people who would use, your chart showed, at least in the Miami, I think, the area, was that a lot of, it was typical transit users that used to use it more, and then the single occupant vehicles had a chance to move out, and that combination sort of helped a large part, well, it didn't sort of help a large part of the population, not just structured for those who are perceived to be able to pay that.
That's absolutely right.
And that's so. Yes. Yes, Mr. Tinsley.
I'd like to ask you, in your studies, it seems to point out that there is a movement with the hot lanes and the cost to mass transit, but bus-oriented. Is that the trend right now, as to opposed to the more expensive, as we've witnessed here in the Washington area, light rail or heavy rail substitute? So buses is seems to be the way at this point.
So I think when you look at it just in general, nationally speaking and beyond the context of urban areas, there's a debate about, like, you know, where should the toll revenues go to? And typically, I think, you know, your traditionalists would say, well, it should go back to serve the highway users that have paid the toll on that particular facility. But then others have said, well, we can improve, you know, services along the corridor. Others have looked at the idea of putting it in other parts of the state, as we've seen in states like Pennsylvania and some others. When it comes to the hot lanes, because most cities generally don't have kind of your rail-based transit service based on, you know, just the size of the metropolitan area or the density, you know, and the development patterns and the like, I mean, it naturally seems to have gravitated towards looking at the express bus options, and not just based on kind of your traditional, you know, public providers of transportation, but also certainly, as in Northern Virginia, your private bus providers as well. And there is some language on that actually in the most recently passed federal surface transportation bill that was actually signed into law last Friday.
Which is what we're doing on outside the Beltway 66, trying to get to the,
yep,
the centers, but still accommodating Metro if and when.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because that's a large, Mr. Zinske, as you know, one of the big hot lanes have been successful, but one of the shortfalls is it has not developed the transit, the throughput that many had hoped for, and many see that as just a cost. But quite frankly, from what this is showing, that the more HOV, the more transit is great not only for the corridor, but for the hot lanes too. In other words, that it's not so. I think that's a key that we're trying to accomplish with outside, is to, as Mr. Zinske pointed out, is back to the concept of throughput. And whether that's accomplished strictly on the, it's all modes, it's multimodal, and I know that's a word that people just use to sort of hang, but really it is getting people on buses, more in cars, and those single occupancy drivers who want to go and pay that, it does allow freeing up all the other options too.
Right.
And I think that's what I saw from this data, is that multimodal, if you don't include the others, then I think you really are just getting into allowing those people who have the means to pay go. And I think that's a big point of what we're trying to do. Ms. Mitchell.
And Gary, if I can just... to comment a little bit on the transit planning that was done as part of the I-66 outside the Beltway, we did look at the potential for future Metro Rail expansion, which obviously is why the design has it's been designed to not preclude Metro Rail in the future. The biggest issue that we have here in Washington is the core capacity issues with Metro, which frankly there are not going to be any more Metro Rail extensions past the Silver Line until the region finds a way to deal with those core capacity issues. And that's a long way off and billions of dollars. So in the meantime, what makes the most sense and was carrying the most riders based on our forecast was the bus-based system, which also provides some redundancy to the Orange Line corridor as well.
Mm-hmm. And let me make a comment on that, too, because it came up, I know, in the comments last night. For those who don't think we listen, I was taking notes in that. And I don't mean that because we really have adjusted a lot of what we've done. And that is that we are precluding expansion of the Metro line, Orange Line. Well, typically those exclusions, and unfortunately in other deals we've done, they've been unlimited. Typically, you do protect the concessionaire during a startup period to get it built. And I discussed it with Ms. Mitchell and others, and Mr. Krasinski will tell you, if we gave Metro today the money to build the Orange Line, we wouldn't get done in 10 years. And I don't mean that to be so very cognizant, but it was important to say we're not going to, as you get this thing built out, we do need your time to build your traffic patterns. But I don't think in any way whatsoever that we have not limited the expansion of Metro, because they've got to get the money, they've got to do the planning. So that's going to, whether we like it or not, Mr. Dyke can serve on the board 10 years, it'd be good if we got it done in that period. And that lucky. We've been very smart about saying, yes, we want the concessionaire, since Mr. Kilpatrick has recommended that, which I agree with, but it's not unlimited. So we don't think in any way we've curtailed the expansion of Metro, as Ms. Mitchell said. We've reserved right-of-way outside for it in that. So, and as you point out, there's VRE and other, that can be expanded immediately. So what we were trying to do is simply make a viable case for somebody who wants to invest this kind of money, but yet not limit it, unlike, I have to say, what we've done in some of the others was not good public policy. I mean, it just wasn't. But we're not going to do that. So, Mr. Dyke.
Yeah, I just wanted to piggyback a little bit on that. I think we're all in support. We heard a lot last night about expanding Metro.
Yep.
The question is, how do you pay for that? But that is part of Metro's momentum plan, is to, you know, at least keep those options open. But I want to draw attention back to the resolution we're going to be voting on. That's why the resolution talked not only about the Potomac River crossing at the American Legion Bridge, but it also talked about adding the tunnel at Roslyn. Because even if you had the money to extend Metro, if you don't have more tunnel capacity, get folks from Virginia into D.C. We're at the max right now. That's why the whole core capacity issue is so very, very important. So that's why I think it's important that that resolution include beginning the discussion about the Roslyn Tunnel, because that keeps open the option that we heard last night of extending Metro.
Yeah, it reminds me of one of the comments the gentleman talked about, having four lanes to get the room out quicker, but failed to notice we only had one door. That's really what it is. I'm all for it, but you've still got to empty it or be able to get through there. And so that's a lot of what we are kept in mind is going through this. I've got one other thing while you're up there, Mr. Lee, and you might comment. It's more of a general thing, but it's in response to some of the public comment. And that is this whole concept that we've already paid taxes and we've paid for the road in that. And it gets really back to whether it's a user fee or in that regard. And typically, that's the way a lot of, if you're an economist, tolling is the exact ultimate user fee. You only charge the people who use it. In fact, I think is it Portland, I think, Mr. Donahue, that's gone to vehicle miles traveled? I think there's that's doing a pilot where you don't pay what you have to certify. You have an odometer, and what roads you pay X, and that's what you pay to maintain the roads and what have you, and spend. So it is this philosophy between, you know, how do you pay for them, whether it's user fees, and, of course, you know, a lot of people, I believe it's a core function of government. Our whole basis of life is around infrastructure. But the point I would make is the roads, unfortunately, are never paid for. They wear out. And most of these interstates were built in the 50s and early 60s. And we've somehow come to the belief that you never have to reconstruct them or build them, even though their estimated lives are coming up. So I understand the frustration. There's a toll, a tax, or a fee. It's really taking
money from individuals. It just depends on how many people you're spreading it over. And I think that's really what this is. Our role is to deal with what resources we have and try to continue moving forward transportation in the Commonwealth. I'm a firm believer in if you want more money, use the money you have wisely so that it's justified to the public. It's one thing to continue to say we shouldn't do anything because we don't have enough money. Whether it's in business or anything I've ever been, if you use the money wisely, then you make a good case for continuing out in front. So I just throw that out. It's not that we don't hear. I'm going to make that clear. We have taken these very seriously. But it is the fact that we are charged with the resources we have to allocate. We can't levy monies. We do have the ability to toll, which we're going to talk about today, asking that tolling authority on inside the Beltway. But that's the resources we have. I think our charge is to use those as efficiently and as wisely as we can. And then I certainly am an advocate for more monies, but I think if we demonstrate that, House Bill 2, 1887, that's a much better case, not only for our legislators, but to the public. So I just want to acknowledge, we hear you, but our charge is to continue moving forward, I believe, here. So anything else for Mr. Lee? Should I?
Just want to note for the record, even though he can't speak to 66, the fact that he's a graduate of Fairfax High School speaks volumes for me, since our three daughters are graduates of Fairfax High School.
Oh, very cool.
Great,
yeah.
Respect for that.
Fantastic.
Well, he's got a new coach at the University of Virginia, too, now. So, and that going there. So.
Oh, yeah. That's a different story. And if I may also, just to wrap things up here, just say that, look, I mean, these types of efforts, you're not going to be able to find that sweet spot from the get-go. It will take some tweaks and some experimentations and just figuring out what fits the kind of the unique profiles and the dynamics in the 66 corridor. So I would just urge you to at least keep that in mind, and that it's not unlike what you've seen with the implementation of P3 concessions as well, right? I mean, you know, you want to take the long view, but obviously you want to minimize any kinds of mistakes or things that appear adversely, that you might not have foreseen. It's still going to happen, but I think it. From the examples from around the country, what they show is that generally, you know, these metropolitan areas have been able to figure out in a way that fits their vision and their policy framework. So thank you again.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Mr. Donahue, was there anything else we had talked about? I know we had a conversation. Anything else in the work session? Yeah, I didn't recall if there was anything else we wanted to discuss. Okay. Well, with that, then, we will officially end our work session. And I will call to order the action. I'm sorry. Yes, we will take a 5-minute break. that's what we discussed. We will take a 5-minute break. It's come back here a little after 10, and then we will resume the actual action items.
Yeah, it's okay. Oh, that's what I was going to. Yeah, that's what it was. That's what it was. It was John's letter. Sorry.
they got the time to do it. Now thinking that they were going to be we are going to continue on
Before I actually start the formal session, though, I am going to call. I just had it over a 50 moment here. It wasn't Mr. Donahue, it was Mr. Lawson. I have Mr. Lawson to come up and just explain one bit of notice to the CTB members. So, Mr. Lawson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. You may recall back last October, we had the board take action on what we call a shelf refunding resolution. As part of our monitoring of the debt programs, we are continuously looking at outstanding debt, and we take advantage of refunding opportunities. And that was the reason for the standing shelf note authorization, so we can just react as things become available. But a requirement of that is that we notify you of actions that we plan to take. So as part of this review, we have found that following our normal 10-year call provisions that we put in our bonds, that's a three series of 2006 bonds related to Oak Grove Project, the NVTD program, and to the 58 program that are available for refunding, and we are looking to move forward with a refunding in the spring. And the requirement from Treasury Board is that the present value savings of any refunding must exceed 3%. And across the board, we're looking at an 18% savings on net present value savings on the refunded par. So it's a very wise move at this point, and we just wanted to make you aware that we're moving forward with this refunding opportunity.
So we'll be giving you a written letter, but just letting you know what's going on. So thank you, Mr. Lawson. Thank you for making sure I wasn't hearing things. All right. So that will formally end our workshop, and now we are back in the formal action item session. The first order of business, since we have completed public comment, will be the approval of the October 27th minutes. Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any comments or corrections? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you. Okay, Mr. Greg, we have some stuff on the maintenance division.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I have two items for your consideration this morning. The first one is in the Fredericksburg District. The town council of the town of Warsaw wanted to memorialize the life and sacrifice of Colonel William A. Jones. Naming of U.S. Route 360, Richmond Road, through the town of Warsaw in Richmond County. VDOT has reviewed this request. They have met all the requirements, and we recommend approval.
Mr. Connors.
Move to approve.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, Mr. Gregg.
Second item is in the Bristol District. The Dickinson County Board of Supervisors wants to memorialize the life and sacrifice of Daryl Shifty Powers. Naming of the bridge on State Route 83, Dickinson Highway, over the McClure River in Dickinson County. VDOT has reviewed the requirements. They have met all the requirements, and we recommend approval.
Mr. Matney.
Yes, so moved. So apparently there's a good story behind this that I just received, but I'd be glad to share that with other board members in the near future, okay?
I did think it was naming a bridge Shifty was a little, but I suspect it'll be okay. Well, he certainly deserves this recognition on that. This second. Any other discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Yes, thank you very much. Next is Mr. Thrasher. Good morning, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, good morning. I have three items to bring forth to the board, items 3, 4, and 5. Item 3, the City of Hampton has petitioned the VDOT for the transfer and conveyance of the right-of-way and permanent easements for a portion of Route 278 located in Hampton Roads District. The request before the board is to officially remove this portion of Route 278 from the state highway system and transfer it to the City of Hampton's urban street system.
Mr. Malvin.
I make a motion to approve.
Second.
Is there any other discussion or questions? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, Mr.
Thrasher. Item number 4, the City of Newport News has petitioned for the transfer and conveyance of the right-of-way and permanent easements for a portion of Route 143 located in VDOT's Hampton Roads District. The request before the CTB is to officially remove this portion of Route 143 from the state highway system and transfer back to the city of Newport News.
Mr. Malvin.
I make a motion to approve.
Any discussion or questions?
Just
yes, Mr. Whitten.
Yes, sir. It'd be nice to have a visual of what we're talking about in terms of the real estate. We know that VDOT is a large real estate holder. And you just read this quickly, and you don't know if they're just giving the street right away or own 15 acres adjacent to it. It's just, it'd be nice to have something more. I'm assuming that's all it is. It's just,
if you click on it.
There's a link.
For those of you who redo their homework, they can click on it and see it.
if you go to the resolution, it says portion of Route 143, and you highlight, you can click that. It should open.
And you have real super good eyes.
You can see it now. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
No, we understand, Mr. Weir. You're right. This is stuff we can, but it is on the website. In advance, but we can also, I have no issue with wanting to bring the charts.
If this sheet of paper had been on the right below the thing, I would.
Yeah, yeah.
And if I could offer this type, the two resolutions that you have, this one and the preceding one, today when we acquire right-of-way within city limits, we automatically are able to convey that right-of-way to the city upon completion of the project, but older projects throughout Virginia, when we acquire the right-of-way to build a project within city limits, the right-of-way was acquired in the name of the Commonwealth, and in some cases, even through annexation and other things, that land has not been transferred. This is a cleanup. We probably have hundreds, if not thousands, of locations around the state, and as we become aware of them and the city requests it, we make that conveyance. They've been responsible for the street since the beginning, but it cleans up the right-of-way action.
That's correct.
And also what we do, just for all the CTV members, is the actual district member is consulted and gone through in order to be able to provide additional information to the board in addition to VDOT. So it's not just VDOT and we're not looking at it in that regard. Yeah, and that's right. But no, but I agree with you. Sometimes a chart is really worth 1,000 words, so very much. Okay,
lastly,
we have to vote, I think. Yes. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Mr. Thrasher.
Lastly, item number 5 involves the establishment and modification of limited access control for I-564 and the intermodal connector in VDOT's Hampton Roads District construction. I-564 intermodal connector will connect existing I-564 through the Naval Station to the Norfolk International Terminal. VDOT requests to modify the existing limited access along I-564 as well as establish limited access along the intermodal connector.
Mr. Malvin.
I make a motion to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any questions or discussion? I'll make a comment that this is a very vital, important link in Hampton Roads, and this is just the normal administrative things that are necessary.
These are minor adjustments just to facilitate the project.
Right.
Nothing else.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
Ms. Pryor or Mr. Lawson.
Yes. Kelm State and Richmond to work today. Before you have the additions to the six-year program, this month we have actually 7 projects being added. The first 3 you see on your list are locally funded, either through RSTP or local funds. There is a study and 2 PE projects, and then the remaining 4 are safety HSEP projects.
Okay, item number 6 we'll take first, the action on the various projects. Is there a motion?
Motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any questions or comments? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Number 7.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Number 7 is the standard monthly transfers for the month from September into middle of November. Nothing specific or particularly out of the ordinary. Be glad to answer any questions.
Is there a motion?
Second.
Any questions or comments from Mr. Lawson? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Lawson.
Thank you.
See Mr. Latimer here. First couple comments here. Mr. Latimer and I went to the same college, University of Richmond, who, as I understand it today, is the only team in the state still eligible to win a national championship, still playing football for all you Hokies and friends that are in there. So just wanted to point that out, go Spiders. But also, this is for the audience, if people don't know, we have a very active rail committee that meets. Ms. Mitchell chairs along with others in her team, Mr. Latimer is a part of. So I would encourage you, if you really want to get involved in the rail, I know several members are here on it, that's where a lot of things go through as we go through in that regard. So this is a lot of work done by them that we've brought before, but a lot of legwork. So, Mr. Latimer.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary, members of the board. I have four items for your consideration today. Item number eight is action. It is on a rail industrial access application for $300,000 for a Trex company in Frederick County. They will be investing $3 million in their new facility. It will result in an additional 250 rail cars on top of the existing 100 per year. And this application scored 55 of 100 points. The department recommends approval.
Mr. Whitworth.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to say a few words about this. One, in support of this whole process, which we've had a lot of debate, discussion over the past years, Frederick County has been very active in this area. This is the fourth that I've been involved with. And I spent the day or half a day out last week at Trex to actually see exactly what is their proposal here. Trex, as you know, is the leader in the world in decking made from recycled material. It has $450 million of sales, but just about all of their distribution out of Winchester, it's headquartered in Winchester, has been by truck. And this is kind of the beginning of the movement, I believe, to take some of these trucks off the road. This is just the beginning of delivery to about four big box stores, I think there will be more. I think it is going to involve significant investment, actually of $12 million of investment into their production line, which will in turn have an economic development increase in employment of one-third of the employees in Winchester to 125 people. So I highly support this, and I support this program. I make the motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any other comments or discussion? Those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Mr. Latimer.
All right. Thank you. Item number nine is an application for rail industrial access funds in the amount of $450,000 for the Hampton Roads Integrated Bioenergy Complex. The company at this site is Chemrez. They will be investing about $5.8 million into their facility. It will result in 360 new car loads on top of the 420 existing each year. They scored 62 of 100 points, and the department recommends approval.
Mr. Malman.
Just a comment. This is a great investment to bring a closed plant back online and repurpose land. And I wish them great success, and I make a motion to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any comments or questions? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Mr. Latimer.
Okay, item number 10 is amending the final rail program's legislative policy expenditure review of 2015. This was adopted in October. The amendment clarifies language in the narrative to align with the recommendations that the department will retain a contingent interest in our project and within the ability to claw back rail funds if public benefit is not achieved.
Just a comment, this is one that's been well vetted. We've discussed this now going on almost a year, I think, back and forth. I don't know if you want to say anything.
We did bring this to the CTB before. After that, I know Ms. Valentine mentioned, identified a few edits that needed to be made to better align the appendices with some of the text, and I can clarify the intent of the committee's recommendation. So I want to thank also the members that put a lot of time into this. We've been meeting monthly. They've been reading a lot of reports and having very extensive discussions about this. It's been a very active group, so thank you all again for all the work that you've put into this.
Mr. Rosen.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I just want to briefly thank Ms. Valentine and Mr. Dyke and Mr. Kasterwood. It has been a very active committee. It's been a lot of reading, but really want to thank Mr. Latimer, who's put a great deal of time and effort into this, and when there were concerns brought up, I think we had a robust dialogue about it and worked well together to try to incorporate the line of documents better, really in an attempt to make sure things are clarified for the General Assembly and the members of the General Assembly. I just want to particularly thank Mr. Latimer for his work on this.
Is there a motion?
I so move.
Okay. So that is there a second?
Second.
Any other comments, discussion, questions? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Thank you, everyone, for their hard work. Lots of public comment on that, I know. Okay. Mr. Latimer.
Item number 11 is an amendment to the department's six-year improvement plan to to allow the expenditure of $330,000 of intercity passenger rail operating and capital funds for a rail traffic control modeling study associated with our talks to begin a second Lynchburg frequency.
Is there a motion? Ms. Valentine.
Move to support the resolution.
Second.
Any other comments, questions, discussion?
I just make one
comment? Yes, ma'am.
This second train was part of the package in the 29 solution to help move people along the 29 corridor, trying to remove some of the congestion in the Charlottesville area. So this is the full package, and in order to launch the service, we need to get the study package.
Just along those lines, to your recollection, was that a transportation and a political agreement that we got that transportation stuff through?
It was a challenging,
right?
And yes, political. But at the end of the day, I think actually came to a package that is getting something done.
Thank you.
And just one comment about the study as well. As you know, when we need additional capacity from the Class 1 railroads, we typically look at places where we can fund operational improvements and along their corridor in order to free up that additional capacity. That's the intent of this study. So while we expect to get a passenger train out of this to Lynchburg, it will also provide some operational benefits in the corridor as well. And so this is the same corridor that serves that will be serving Roanoke.
Okay, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Maxwell.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, I'm Joanne Maxwell from the Policy Division in VDOT. I'm here to present to you for your consideration item 12 on the agenda. In short, item 12, what we are seeking is the approval of the board for a report that was prepared by VDOT pursuant to legislation and then authority for the secretary to submit that report to the General Assembly. More specifically, in 2014, the General Assembly enacted a budget item that required the CTB to direct VDOT's Bristol-Salem and Staunton districts to pull together a list of I-81 projects that would address congestion and safety issues along the corridor, pull that list together, then prioritize the list pursuant to HB2 process, and then present that list of projects for consideration by the CTB for inclusion in the 6-year program that you all will be considering for June of 2016. What VDOT did, the legislation required an interim report and a final report. What we're asking you to approve today is the final report. You approved the interim report back in November of 2014. For purposes of this report, what VDOT did was they pulled together a list of about 105 projects that would address safety, congestion concerns along the I-81 corridor. Then they met, they had four meetings with various entities, stakeholders along the I-81 corridor to include PDCs, MPOs, legislators, CTB members, first of which, the first meeting was actually hosted by Secretary Lane. After those meetings and gathering input, the districts then took the 105 project list and refined that down, taking into consideration the input they received from these various meetings and other factors, and they refined that list down to a list of 41 projects. Those 41 projects were then made available to the MPOs, to the various entities, stakeholders that had been involved. As a result, various entities have now listed, of those 41 projects, various entities have now submitted 14 projects or applications pursuant to the HB2 process. And those 14 projects are undergoing evaluation now under the HB2 process. What we're asking is that you authorize us to go ahead. The report, you will find the report as attachment A to the resolution. Basically, what the report does is briefly describe the process that was used to arrive at the list of projects. It provides both the 100, it provides the 41 list of projects that was narrowed, as well as the list of projects that were submitted pursuant to the HB2 process. Now, we won't have, obviously, the results of the HB2 process or evaluation prioritization ready by the time we want to submit this report. We make that clear in the report. But what we intend to do is once the HB2 prioritization process is completed, we would come back to you along with all of the other projects that have been prioritized and would note how the I-81 projects did fare. So in a nutshell, that's what we're seeking. We seek your approval of the report and then authorization for the Secretary to take whatever measures are necessary to submit the report to the General Assembly.
Mr. Kilpatrick.
This actually grew out of fundamentally a legislative requirement that we had a report that we had to provide. But out of that, we've really gleaned a lot of information and had a lot of opportunity with legislators, with regional entities and local governments. Looking at the entire 81 corridor, some years back there was a lot of churn regarding this massive reconstruction of the 81 corridor with potentially separated lanes, and caused a lot of controversy both along the 81 corridor and in the General Assembly that ultimately resulted in some legislation precluding the tolling of I-81. So specific language today in the code that only allows the tolling of 81 with the approval of the General Assembly. So we've come a long way from that. I think the recognition today in terms of what is financially viable along the 81 corridor helped drive some of this discussion. And I would say it's been very, very productive in terms of the types of projects that we could consider to manage safety issues, manage capacity issues, and even economic development issues along the 81 corridor. This report is not House Bill 2, but it supports it. This report is not the six-year plan, but it actually supports us as we look forward at opportunities. In addition to House Bill 2, on the 81 and the 95 corridor specifically, I directed staff to look at what I would call small-scale improvements, operational and safety improvements that can be done either through House Bill 2 funds or through our safety program, the HSIP program, where we have funds available for addressing safety-related concerns. So this report is definitely a supporting and companion, as well as meeting, again, beginning with a legislative requirement, it's gone much further than that and really helped, I think, the communities and VDOT focus on what we can do in the quarter.
Thank you. Let me get a motion first, and then we can have questions. But let me make one comment. Let's just deal with this. I'm going to comment afterwards. Is there a motion?
There's
a second. Okay, so we have a first and a second. Now comments. Mr. Worthworth?
My question relates to the HB2 process. Can or should this report be basis for which one would argue should make a low-scoring project be accepted over a higher-scoring project?
My sense is no, that it wouldn't influence the scoring under House Bill 2. But what it does help is kind of create a framework for a county board of supervisors or a planning district commission or an MPO to say, okay, I've got this menu of projects along here and really focus attention more towards this is a project I want to submit under House Bill 2. I don't see it as in terms of making the score better or worse, but I do think there's a lot of value in this kind of study. And again, we're looking at things in the Fredericksburg area on 95, actually from Northern Virginia into the Fredericksburg district, a similar type of thing where, again, it gets people focused on really what's realistic in terms of projects, and out of that, these jurisdictions can pull projects and say, that's the one I want to score under House Bill 2.
But many of these projects along 81 are bridge, the high dollar things are bridge related, and there will be other federal funds that can be applicable for that.
In terms of if it's a replacement in kind, if it's a structurally deficient bridge and it's a replacement in kind, that would fall under the state of good repair process. But if it's replacing a bridge, and quite often in these types of projects, there's a couple reasons for bridge replacement. It's a capacity improvement, but it's also moving the piers so we can provide roadway improvements either above or below the bridge deck. So in those cases, a bridge project would flow through the House Bill 2 process. But it, as you said, it also helps us in state of good repair to highlight what's important in terms of bridge replacements where capacity is not included.
Mr. Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the report. I'm probably going to ask Mr. Donahue if he wouldn't mind speaking a little to this. Over the course of the past month or so, particularly Mr. Fredlin and I have worked closely with Mr. Donahue on this. The report is on congestion and safety. What it's not on is reliability. And I think that in looking at this, we've learned that under the current congestion measures, 81 is not congested. Even if we look around the country at other states and what they're doing, how they're measuring congestion, it's simply not congested by the numbers. However, it's very unreliable. And I know that Mr. Whitworth and Mr. Matney can attest to the fact that when there is an accident, you can have a 25-mile backup, and it can be 5 hours of waiting time. It's a major commerce route from north to south, a lot of trucks. In some areas, it's 33% truck traffic, though it was only designed for 15% truck traffic. And there's very little redundancy. You can't direct traffic off onto Route 11 because that immediately gets backed up too. So it causes major delays. Some people have advocated, as you said, for adding a lane 325 miles. I don't think we'd be responsible, though I live on 81. I don't think that'd be a wise fiduciary decision. It just doesn't make sense. It's too expensive, and it would take too long. The topography causes some major problems, particularly with rest. I think we see in the New River Valley, where the truck climbing lanes were added, how it's made a world of difference. There's almost no problem there anymore, whereas before, often, you had hours of delays there. So I hope Mr. Donahue could speak for a second to this, because what he and his team are working on is language that was added to the resolution that directs measure be created to capture the notion of reliability as opposed to congestion and safety.
Yes, so Mr. Chairman, to Mr. Rosen's point, the language that's in the B-Trans resolution, I think, is about one or two away.
Right.
As he noted, the typical reliability metrics that are in widespread use today focus a lot on the frequency of events, and the events on 81 don't happen at a level of frequency that's similar to, say, 95 or 64 in Hampton Roads. On the flip side, when they do happen, they are extremely severe, and there are limited redundant routes, and so we are working with consultants and staff at VDOT and the Airport office to try and develop kind of a hybrid metric that can really capture kind of a mix of severity and frequency there to really identify some of these hotspots along 81. That those who use it, they know where they are, they see it. I mean, I got stuck in a 20-mile backup myself one day, and it was just a wreck along the road. And again, it doesn't happen every single day, but it may happen once a month, and when it does happen, it's hours long and it's miles long. So we are working on that. It is going to take some time because we're going to be cutting a little bit of new ground there, but we will be working on that issue.
Thank you.
Thank you. And this goes, I think, to what Mr. Whitworth was saying in terms of HB2, the fear being the congestion doesn't get captured when it's really the reliability measure that is necessary. So, well, thank you, Mr. Donahue, for your willingness to work on this, and I think it'll be I think it'll benefit 81 and benefit areas where we do need safety and spot improvements that are more financially realistic. Thank you.
Any other comments or discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Thank you.
Come on up, Mr. Donahue. But I want to point out here, and I sort of mentioned it with Miss Valentine about Route 29. All across the state, I was on a CTV and I came into office. There was a lot of things being talked about and studied and bannered and no action taken. Whether it was Route 29 in Charlottesville, whether it's 81, whether it was Hampton Roads and getting a plan together, or whether it was here, up here. The things they had in common, been talked and bannered and studied for 20 or 30 years, and whether you want to call it trying to get the perfect solution or getting there, nothing was getting done. So that has been a primary focus of this administration, is to move things forward. Because all we were doing is watching the expensive get further and further behind and nothing getting done. So this is not anything, we'll talk a little bit about later, what we've done up here is what we've done in Charlottesville, in Hampton Roads, in the I-81 corridor, is taking, and all of them are a little bit different, the methodologies, but the end result is trying to get people seeing action taken that helps start solving the problem. So I just point that out, and I'll come back to it a little bit more when we get into what we're going to vote on here later. But I don't want the residents of Northern Virginia to think that this process is not being played out across the Commonwealth, because it is. And we got to start doing something. As I said earlier, I can only move forward with the resources we have, best efficient and fiduciary, and that's what we're determined to do. Okay, Mr. Donahue.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. Good morning. I have three items before you. The first deals with the presentation we discussed yesterday, which would be a $50 million loan from Virginia Transportation Infrastructure Bank to the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel District to fund a part of the Thimble Shoals project. Again, that is a project to add a second tunnel to provide more redundancy along that critical link between the Eastern Shore and Hampton Roads. The $50 million represents less than 5% of the more than $900 million total construction cost. This project was reviewed by the Virginia Resources Authority. It will have a minimum coverage ratio over the term of at least 1.69 times and has an average coverage ratio just below 2. And this project does have the support of the local TPO, and we would recommend that the board approve this project.
Mr. Malvin.
Mr. Chairman, I'm advised that I should stay on this discuss on the member of
I would move to adopt the
okay. Why back up here. Why do you have to abstain so you're a member of the board? I used to bring him when I was a member.
Mr. Chairman, that was the advice that provided this morning by the Office of the Attorney General.
Well, as long as you disclose it, but nonetheless, we'll move on. I will take exception to that, but I understand what you're saying. We got to move over here.
Caution is better.
Okay, fine. Is there any other discussion?
Other than that, I know it represents 5% of the project, but it's a critical part of financing to make this reality, and it's a great project. Being secured very, very well, I support it.
Okay. Any other comments or discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Okay, Mr. Donahue.
The next item I have before you are the next steps in the Potomac River crossing. The board may recall that I presented earlier this summer on a detailed multi-year effort examining the Potomac River crossing capacity in Northern Virginia. A few key findings from that study was generally that there's no one single solution to addressing mobility across Potomac River, that the American Legion, the Wilson Bridge, the 14th Street Bridge, and the Roslyn Tunnel carry the highest traffic volumes. Approximately 35% of all Virginians that cross the Potomac River use the Metrorail system, and that the American Legion Bridge has the highest levels of current and future projected congestion, as well as the highest percentage increase in use into the future. And so the resolution before you has a number of be it resolved clauses. In general, they are as follows: that there is no one solution to addressing the mobility needs of crossing the Potomac River, that the American Legion Bridge and the Roslyn Tunnel are the most pressing needs, that the board encourages the Office of the Secretary to initiate discussions with the state of Maryland regarding project development of an improved American Legion Bridge,
that the board encourages the Office of the Secretary to begin discussions with the state of Maryland regarding additional river crossings, including the Harry Nice Route 301 bridge, as well as a bridge crossing west of the American Legion, and that the board encourages the Office of the Secretary to initiate discussions with the District of Columbia and Maryland regarding improvements to the Roslyn Tunnel and Metrorail capacity at that choke point. And then finally, it directs the office to report back to the board on a regular basis regarding the activities related to this resolution.
Is there a motion?
Motion.
Second. Any comments or discussion?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Krasinski.
I want to thank fellow board members for their consideration of this resolution and the hard work that was put in by Mr. Dyke in helping craft this, and with the input from task force as well. I think we have a big tent answer to this, but I want to emphasize that if it were up to me as the Northern Virginia district member, I'd say all four of these are worthy pursuits in terms of the regional aspect of all of them. HAPS 301 Bridge, the Western Crossing, we know the obvious, the American Legion, and the Roslyn Tunnel, but all of them present specific different challenges as to whether you can fulfill constructing these. So the start is the discussion with Maryland and with the District of Columbia to see, in partnership with them, which ones are preferable to be pursued. Before we start spending a whole lot of money on this study or that study, let's see if there's common ground. And I know the Secretary is already, and Deputy Secretary are both working to that end. So I urge the support of this resolution.
Mr. Dyke.
Now, I would just add one point. It wasn't mentioned in the resolve that you listed, but it has to do with the fact that we're also encouraging business groups and other regional organizations to reach out to the decision makers in Maryland and the district in order to encourage them and inform them while this is so very important. And I think that's going to be critical. We've heard from some of the speakers in the last couple of days about how important they think this is. They need to express that to folks who actually need to be persuaded, as Gary indicated, that these are worthwhile projects.
And, Mr. Chairman, I do apologize. I inadvertently left that off. That is included in the resolution. It's the second to last, now there before it resolved. So my apologies.
No, that's okay. No problem.
Any other comments or discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. Next, Mr. Donahue.
The next item I have before the board is the adoption of the V-Trans vision and needs assessment. Per the Code of Virginia, every 4 years, the board is to update the needs assessment that is used as a part of the development of the long-range transportation plan. That process has been developed over the last 18 months in coordination with the board. If you recall, starting back in early 2014, we started with presentations to the board about trends as well as projected future outcomes that we thought might be taking place because of those trends. And then this year in 2015 began in earnest the work of partnering with the MPOs and local governments to take a look at the capacity and transportation needs and the corridors of statewide significance, the regional networks, the local growth areas, as well as safety needs. We did meet individually with all of the MPOs on multiple times, at least three times for each MPO, and we also have met individually with each of you board members regarding this. So the resolution has several clauses in it. The first is it would accept the needs assessment and the vision for V-Trans. It would also have two caveats to that acceptance. The first is the issue Mr. Rosen and I discussed previously, which is working on an additional measure to analyze reliability, to examine severity of those reliability issues when they're less frequent but more severe than what we see in some other parts of the state. And the second deals with an issue in the Fredericksburg area that Mr. Connors as well as the Fredericksburg area MPO have raised, where the data that was used as a part of the needs assessment is from 2014. And there are some parts of the state where significant transportation, the network has undergone significant changes since 2014, and in the Fredericksburg region, that's namely the opening of the 95 express lanes and kind of the bottleneck that's been created at the southern terminus there. And so we will be directing kind of the staff at the Office of Intermodal Planning and Investment to update the needs assessment in parts of the state where a major change in the network takes place with more recent data to be able to capture that moving forward. There are also some provisions dealing with next steps. So as you know, at this point, we have only identified needs. We have not taken the next step to identify what are potential solutions to that. And so there's a be it resolved clause that would direct the Office of Intermodal Planning and Investment under the direction of the Secretary of Transportation to work with you all to prioritize the various needs in each of the districts using a methodology that would be accepted by the board, and then to start to develop solutions for those prioritized needs using the vision, goals, and objectives that are outlined in the broader policy document. And then finally, it talks about analyzing in the time period after 2025 different types of scenarios and what the implications of those may be for the transportation network. And so it may look at things like autonomous cars, different land use patterns, or different types of transportation technology that may be advanced, and really just help inform the board to understand what that may mean for the future with regard to transportation. As you may recall, the needs assessment only went out to 2025 because of a lot of the uncertainty regarding how the transportation world is going to function, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 years from now.
Is there a motion? Mr. Kasper's. Yes. Second with Mr. Rosen. Okay. Any other comments or discussion? Mr. Connors.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Nick, I just want to thank you for taking our comments into consideration. Really appreciate that.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Donahue. I felt the next topic on here as Governor McCullough's top transportation representative, that I should be the one presenting this regarding inside the Beltway on Interstate 66. And Mr. Donahue will be over there if there are any particular questions that over and above my that you want answered. But I thought about this a lot last night because it really did take to heart a lot of what we heard. I've mentioned how we've gone about attacking these issues across the state for the spend no action. And I can honestly believe, firmly and honestly say to you that I do believe this is the best transportation and practical solution for moving forward what is the most congested highway, part of a highway, in one of the most congested parts of the country. It is not just a standalone. It is a piece of the puzzle we put up yesterday in regards of the hot lanes network we're trying to achieve. It is critical to a piece to outside the Beltway in terms of our ability to negotiate with private contractors because of the efficiencies it brings, which Mr. Donahue's presentation showed yesterday. I firmly believe that enticed some of these contractors in their bidding. In that, and I know there's a lot of different aspects. If you listened to last night, it seemed to me the comments fell in three areas. That they're just those who are against tolls. And I, as I thought before, I can understand that in that. And if you're against tolls and you don't want to do anything, that's a reasoned position. But what's not a reasoned position is say you're against tolls and there's another way to do this and we can pay for it and it's all going to work out. That's not a reasoned position, as we've gone through and shown. Just widening takes money from other areas. Without the imposition of the tolls and the multimodal benefits, we don't get what we're getting in there. The other two groups that sort of fell into, there were the ones that lived outside the region who didn't feel like to have to pay additional monies to get in to where they're going to. Then you had those who wanted the widening right away. Then you had those who lived in the area who particularly don't ever want the widening in that regard. And I've tried to be consistent in terms of how, with Mr. Kilpatrick and VDOT looking at this, we've tried to minimize the impact on households wherever we could. And I hope we get to zero outside. I'm not sure that we will, in all honesty. I know there's still a lot of work to go, but as Mr. Kilpatrick pointed out yesterday, we've not even begun to look at the alternative technical concepts, which I hope will minimize those impacts. But that same logic needs to be taken inside. I mean, I know those who say, well, the best way to protect them is to tear down a bunch of houses and that'll make free flowing. There are those that think other. So I didn't see anything. I mean, that's very typical of what we see across the Commonwealth when we have these situations. I'm not demeaning them in any way. They're very real if you're impacted by this. But taking that all into account, this solution does minimize, does not take monies from others, and I believe eventually gets it to what everybody wants. It just may not be in the time sequences that everybody has asked for. So I want to, you know, Governor McCullough, when he campaigned and is governed on unlocking transportation in the Commonwealth, and particularly Northern Virginia. And with what we've done, we started with the 95 hot lanes, the 495 hot lanes. We've now negotiated at least deal points. We're working on 395, we've announced. Mr. Kilpatrick is working with the concessionaire on the southern part. There are others that think that should be more. We'll see where that goes, but he's working on that. Now with 66, we have a procurement outside. We've determined and went through a very competitive process, very robust response from the private sector. There were many of those who said that was not going to happen and all that. That proved to be just totally inaccurate in that regard. And there are those who say we're moving too fast. There are those who say we're moving too slow. We've been looking at this for 15 years, this particular issue, through Democratic, Republican administrations, and it's all been coming back to a very central point, multimodal solutions, moving through there. And then it gets down to how you pay for it, knowing the fiscal constraints we're dealing with. House Bill 2, you all have seen what that is. This is a self-financing project. And I want to point out the toll facilities account, which was set up exactly for this. We report on that to the General Assembly each year, the balances and the uses of it. And there are some who say we had a secret account we didn't tell them about. That's just obviously false. A lot of political rhetoric going on with this. I saw again this morning McCullough's out there for $17 tolls. You all know that's just an inaccurate statement, not being truthful as to what it is. The average is going to be more like $5 or $6, and no one has to choose to pay those tolls. That's a key point. No one has to choose to pay those tolls. It is opening up an opportunity that now doesn't exist. I know there are those who don't believe the modeling, this is going to clog the streets. The triggers need to enact too soon. You're too fast. You're too slow. All I know, it's been almost 18 months of work with working with not just FEDA, but the counties and cities impacted, their traffic engineers, their modeling. And I dare say I can go out tomorrow and I can pay somebody else to give you a completely different model if I gave them different assumptions and all that. All we're going to, but the key to that is the money stay in the quarter. And they're there in case those unintended consequences happen. I don't know what else that we could do in terms of looking through this and having a pragmatic and reasonable solution. I'm not saying it's politically correct. I'm not saying that ideologically people on both sides don't have an issue. But any fair-minded person looking at the resources, looking at where we're starting from, I don't think anybody who really looked at this from that perspective, they may have issues with it, but could say it's just something that's just totally out of bounds. We're going to start over and do what? I've consistently said, what is the solution? We've now looked at the things that have been suggested, and just widening doesn't give us near the benefits. Adding additional lanes, couple billion dollars, and all that. I mean, that's great to say. It's great to tell the public you got a better plan. It would be great to say one you could actually implement that we actually had resources for. That's what we tried to do here. So with that, I officially cannot make, I only vote in case there's a tie in going forward here. But I can say wholeheartedly, I believe you know everything I know. And there are those who said we should have had every meeting in Northern Virginia about this. And so, just like, I guess, in the Hampton Roads, we should have had every meeting there in Hampton Roads and in Richmond, that these meetings are streamed. You know everything I know, with the exception of, and I will do this
those things that would make us non-competitive in negotiating our with the private sector. But I will disclose all those when the contract is signed. But I won't give it away until we have a deal, and we're going to keep the for this whole thing outside. But it all ties together. But I will make everything known once we get this thing done, and hope it's in the next 6 or 7 months. We hope to be able to finalize that deal. So I've laid it all out there. I have tried to respond to every question that's come up. We've made ourselves available. And with that, I wholeheartedly strongly urge that we adopt this for the betterment of the regions and the citizens of Northern Virginia and the Commonwealth. So with that, Mr. Kasparitz, I'll look to you.
Mr. Chairman, I move to adopt the resolution.
Second. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a first second. Now, any comments or discussion? Mr. Kozinski.
I think as I look at the number 16 item, I have no qualms of supporting authorization to impose tolls on I-66 inside the Beltway and the advancement of the toll facilities. I guess my concern is that, well, number one, doing nothing is just not acceptable. I want to make that fact known. Number two, we are giving single occupancy drivers the opportunity to opt in to use that road, an opportunity they do not have right now. Number three, we all know sitting on this board that mega projects cannot be wholly funded by the Commonwealth of Virginia. There's just not that money there. My reservations go, as I said yesterday, more to the memorandum of agreement with the NVTC regarding the lack of a trigger on the PM rush hour, which I think is a problem as we sit here today, and by agreement will really not be addressed for quite a long time. So I intend to take every action we can to keep an eye on that. And if there's separate actions that would expedite that, if the situation worsens, which I think it will continue to do, then we have that opportunity to do that. And my other reservation is on the long-term nature of this memorandum. I want to ask the same question that I asked yesterday, and Mr. Fralin, I think, espoused as well. I want to make sure that we have the adequate checks and balances to what actions NVTC can take. They're my major reservations. We're given the fact that there's a fiscal, physical, and political realities that we have to live with. There's no question of that. And for that reason, I think the resolution is worthwhile, but I would really like to see or get more answers or make sure that we keep on the front burner those questions about the expansion in that spot improvement area, which the triggers don't affect, and also that this board has not relinquished our obligation to oversee how that money is spent and make sure that we have adequate checks and balances against NVTC. Not to say they're not going to do a great job. I hope they do. But I still would like to see our group or those who replace us have that check in the future.
Yeah, a couple comments in that regard. You know, the major business terms, based on our last discussion with them, were adjusted. We've all been known for about 7 or 8 weeks now. But I'll point out that we've been careful. We have not given up any responsibilities of the board. And I'll also point out, just like we've done in Charlottesville, that's not the end of 66. In other words, that doesn't relinquish us from keep exploring, finding ways to make it better, just like it did does in 29 and others. I would say this is not the end of the story. It is just moving us down so we continue to have a story. I would reiterate, too, what Ms. Grozinski said. I think us taking no action is almost relinquishing our duties. And I say that wholeheartedly, knowing that I'm sure there's going to be political, the General Assembly session. I understand all that. But I can't control what others can do. All I can control is what I believe is right in moving this forward. Mr. Williams.
Just a brief comment. I know, you know, those who oppose the project will certainly criticize us for moving too swiftly. And those who support the project probably wish we'd done this 10 years ago. I guess the point that convinces me we've got to move this is the critical link between this and what we're trying to do on outside the Beltway, which is critical that we do right now. We're 10 years too late on that. I wish we're doing it now. And the certainty as to what's going to happen inside and how that impacts the proposals and the companies that are trying to put together what I hope will be a real great deal for the city of Virginia. I mean, that certainty is going to be that they can't just rely on and hope that they're going to do the right thing. It's going to impact this project for 30 years. They have to know what you're going to do inside.
Yeah.
And that in and of itself is enough value for the mayor to support the resolution.
And I would point out there's still a lot of public hearings to go. Yeah, a whole lot. And there are still lots of opportunities where things can go awry. So I'm not hoping that we're going to move, that they don't, but I'm just saying we have a lot to still accomplish. Mr. Dyke.
Yeah, I did second the motion, but I do want to associate myself with the comments that Gary made. I think the points he raised were very legitimate, and we're going to have to be vigilant and stay on this the entire way. The second point I wanted to make was I think it's appropriate for us to acknowledge publicly the yeoman's job that VDOT has done in reaching out to the community and getting input and helping us shape this program. I think we would be wrong not to note that, because there are members of VDOT here who have gone to a lot of hearings, gotten a lot of input which we have heard, and in fact has helped change some components of this proposal. So I just wanted to thank VDOT for that effort.
And I can point to very tangible changes in this project as a result of that public comment. I know those who don't ultimately do what they want to do say you don't listen. That I would beg to differ with them. May not agree with them. We try to, but are not going to be moving off what I believe is my fiduciary responsibility to try to solve this issue here. Mr. Tong.
The one concern that I have, and I think Nick addressed it yesterday, but I think we need to be mindful going into the future, is as we're evaluating projects to be added, we're taking a close look at the financing of those projects and ensuring that if and when the time comes to widen 66, that the funds are in fact available through the tolling facilities to do so.
Absolutely. Ms. Valentine.
In speaking with several of my colleagues, you know, it is a rare meeting, a rare opportunity for us to be on this board and to have, you know, the Sierra Club, the Coalition for Smarter Growth, representatives of local government and the Chamber of Commerce supporting a plan, not because it's perfect, but because it's important that we move forward with it. So I thought having that support is important. And being at the meeting last night, I appreciate this morning the fact that just addressing some of the concerns that did come up about making sure we leave the door open for Metro, that's not closed, that this process will be ongoing. The information about tolling, that much of the information that's out there right now is not accurate, and that we are trying to minimize the impact and we're only tolling single occupancy vehicles other than hybrids, which will be slowly removed, but it's only on them on 66 that they're not available. They can't drive on it now anyway, legally. So I think that's an important point, that the average cost will be $6. And then finally, the impact on the side roads. While we have information that the impact on the adjacent streets will be minimal, I think that's also an important part of this that we continue to monitor. So just listening to a lot of the concerns that were raised last night, I think that it is going to be an ongoing process for all of us. And this is just the beginning.
Mr. Whitworth.
I too will support this. I think if we heard any agreement last night, there was overall overwhelming agreement that one, we have a problem. Two, no action is a bad decision. We all heard and agree and understand and felt there are many valid personal hardships. There are many valid differences of opinion. There are valid issues with timing as to what component should come before another. And we among ourselves, I'm sure, have those same questions. We can only do what we have come to conclusions from our experts, our scoring, our task force have come to some collaborative conclusion as is the best way to go. I was reminded a little bit of the fact that while there's no perfect solution, Mr. Chase's quote, that let's not let perfect get in the way of good. I believe that what we are doing is certainly better than nothing, and hopefully it's good. I do have concern also, however, to follow up on the MOA, and maybe you can clarify this for me a little bit. As I understand it, it's a 40-year agreement with one entity who has a choice of being able to employ these toll revenues among five different components. If they make those recommendations, we do have to accept it. Is that correct?
That's correct.
If we
do have to accept it, if they're in compliance with the MOA and the guidelines, yes.
Right. What is our recourse as a party to that if we are not satisfied with the performance or the administration from them? What is our recourse?
Well, I'll give you the contractual and then the reality. Contractual is there's things we go through in terms of what the contract laid out and his evaluation. Reality is that who has the gold makes the rules. You have the money. You have the purse strings. In other words, collections. You can stop the money. Whether that's in violation of the contract, that'll be something that you'd be willing to take. But this board does not relinquish its financial. It has the ability to stop making the payments.
So we go into it in an era of good faith from all parties.
I don't understand how you cannot. Yeah, how you cannot.
And I believe that the constituents of all parties will be supportive of this, and I think we need to go forward. We just can't not.
Any other comments or concerns? Yes, Mr. Connors.
I just wanted to echo Mr. Dyke's comments about public engagement and commend you all for going the extra mile. And I heard that yesterday from a member of the General Assembly. We don't often hear kind things from members of the General Assembly with respect to this project, but she is very knowledgeable, very respected, has a lot of history in transportation, and she really commended you and the whole BDOT team, transportation team, for really going the extra mile and getting public engagement and changing some of this, the design and concept going forward. So there is one member of that General Assembly who respects and appreciates what y'all have done. Thank you.
Thank you. One other comment, struck me also, Mr. Whitworth. There's performance reporting. They have to report to the board. And if there's performance reports, I think that's right, Mr. Johnny, performance, and if that, you take corrective action too. I want to make sure that we have been careful and have not given up any rights you have. Now, it's all good faith. The choice was whether a regional organization should do it or whether it should be done by at the state level. And quite frankly, if you look at House Bill 2, all those House Bill 1887, the effort has been getting to make sure we get the best decisions that are made locally. I know there are some who don't like this organization, that organization. So, you know, there is safeguards in place in that. But quite frankly, a lot of questions about, well, what's the right type of bus service? I haven't seen a lot. That's because it needs to be the ones that work. And quite frankly, that decisions are mostly best made at the local level in that. So I know there's parochial and political issues regarding, quite frankly, with every organization up here, and it's not that way unlikely in the rest of the state. There's some who like HR TAC and some that don't. There's some that like NBTC, there's some that don't. You know, it may, if you look at the composition, again, we've been tried to driven by realities and who's making representing the citizens the most impacted. That board was most representative of what it was charged to do. Whether it's a good board or bad board, I mean, that's all subject, but in terms of looking at policy and governorship, that made the sense. And it made more sense. But quite frankly, if they were unwilling to do it, then we would have done it at the CTV level. We would have had Director Mitchell do it. But think about this. You mentioned the long term of the contract. We're going to change. Maybe y'all won't, but I'm going to change in a couple of years. And who knows? And as people rotate in and out, think about what we've done with VDOT. Every 4 years, leadership comes in, and all of a sudden, they got a different view. This should be a consistently managed project and most delivered by the people who are responsible for it. So, anyway, Mr. Dyke.
Yeah, just to speak to that last point, having served on NVT for 3 years, I can speak to the fact that they are very representative of what's going on up here. They understand what the needs are. There's a lot of longevity on that body, so they've got a lot of experience in working on these things, and I'm confident that they're going to put in the kind of effort that's going to be appropriate. But as the Secretary says, we do have the ultimate opportunity to decide what goes forward, and I'm sure this board is going to be very vigilant in carrying out that responsibility.
I go back to that quote somebody said last night about the number one congested road in the number one congested area in the whole country. Think about
yeah.
that.
And I think he said congratulations.
Any other comments or discussion? I know this is probably one of, just to be, let's be fair, one, there are some votes we take. This is a very important vote. So I want everybody to be comfortable that they're ready to vote. Okay, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. We move forward, and I appreciate this work here. Okay, Mr. Siles.
Mr. Secretary?
Oh, yes.
I just want to make sure for the record that I voted yes. I was making a comment to my colleague. I just want to make sure.
We had that. I didn't hear any abstention, anyone's against. So, yeah, there were no noes.
It was very telling last night when we had the second generation speaker. Her parents had come to speak.
To speak, state, right? Yes.
We don't want third generation coming.
I'm going to make sure that I said all in favor. I heard everybody. Is there any against? Okay, I thought I asked that. Okay, just want to make sure. Okay, Mr. Silas.
Good morning, Mr. Secretary, members of the board. Since the board last met, we've had two VDOT bid lettings. At 61 projects in those lettings and valued at $152 million. Of those projects, six need to come before the board for action. They were valued as an aggregate of $86 million. I would like to present them as they appear in the ballot for consideration. The first project is known as Order H-78. This is for the replacement of two bridges over the Meharon River in the town of Emporia on I-95. We had excellent competition. We've analyzed the bids. We find the low bid represents an excellent value.
Is there a motion?
Whenever I see the bid, this was more than yesterday. Is there anything of interest about that?
Sometimes our planning estimates don't keep up with what the marketplace offers up. A good indicator is how much competition we have. If you'll notice, we have five bidders on this. It did not exceed the limits of VDOT's evaluative estimate.
normally when you see this, there's limited competition, but in this case,
probably all the bidders we could expect.
And as Mr. Sidley's mentioned, there's a couple of different, I'll call it, published numbers that get out there. We have the numbers that are in the six-year plan that include the total overall budget, and in that there's a construction component. But separate from all that, through the construction division, we do what we call a confidential and independent estimate, much more closely aligned with how bidders would bid a job. And we use that as a check in our process to make sure that the bids we're receiving, whether it's a single bid or in this case, good competition, five bidders, that it's with, we believe that it's within reason. Because the other thing that helps us do is if we see an anomaly, we might recognize that we've got a problem in our package. There might be something that we've missed. There might be a bid item. There might be a particular provision that is causing the cost to get, I'll call it, out of whack. So, in the construction division, that's a component of it. So when he mentions that our independent estimate, our confidential estimate, we don't provide that number to anyone because that's our number. We don't want the industry to see that number. But again, it's a check that we use on every one of our projects.
Still need a motion? Is there a motion?
Second.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any other discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Sally's?
The second project is at I-81 at exit 14 in Abingdon. This is a reconfiguration of that exit. Again, we had five bidders. We think it represents excellent value, and we're recommending it for award.
Is there a motion?
Second.
Second. Any other discussion? Comments? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Next project is on Route 20. This is to replace a bridge over the Slate River just north of Dilwyn. We had five bidders again. We've analyzed the bid. We think it represents excellent value, and we'd like to recommend it for award.
I can move.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
The next project is repairs to the Route 301 bridge over the Rappahannock River to Port Royal. As you can see, we have eight bidders on that. That is amazing competition for this type of work. We think it represents excellent value, recommending it for award.
Is there a motion? Second, anyone?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
The next project is for what they call the Loop Road in the town of Culpeper. This ties in with a Route 29 improvement that we made several months ago. We had five bidders. We've analyzed the bid, think it represents good value, and we're recommending it for award.
Second. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay.
Mr. Secretary?
Yes.
Can I just note for the record that in the elections last November, last month, my oldest daughter was elected to the county council of Culpeper, so
oh, okay.
I'm taking a renewed interest in what goes on. So Alice and I talked a little bit about that. So.
Going up. Okay. All right. Okay.
And the final project is on Route 460 in the town of Lynchburg. We had seven bidders. We've analyzed the bids. We think it represents good value, and we're recommending it for award.
Ms. Valentine.
I say move.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those, any discussion or comments? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you, sir. Mr. Kilpatrick, anything on the threshold reports or anything?
No, sir, but one of the things that I want to mention to the board, we track on an annual basis the total value of our advertisements, and last year, we were right at $2 billion. We're tracking right now a total of $1.76 billion. We had anticipated that number was going to be down a little bit, but we still have two lettings to go. And we'll let report to you on where we end up for the year. But again, that continues to reinforce the robust program of advertising. This is a combination of maintenance contracts, construction contracts, and engineering service contracts. But to give you sort of a framework, I think our all-time high was either 2.3 or 2.4 billion. Is that right, John? But again, we've been tracking approaching $2 billion each year, so that it looks like we'll end up very close to that again.
Yes, Mr. Connors.
Can we have a full economic impact look at that, the multiplier effect, jobs, that kind of thing? Next time.
Let me talk with staff about that. We have done, through Chimura and some other economists, done BTCA, Virginia Transportation Construction Alliance, they've done some things. AASHTO has done, and ARTCO, which is the National Association of Highway Contractors, have done some things on the multiplier when you put a dollar into transportation. So let me talk with staff about that, because I think it is an important number, the value of when you put a dollar into roadway construction, you know, what's the multiplier in terms of overall economic benefit?
Okay, is there any new business or anything to come before the board? Well, let me take this opportunity. I know this was a busy couple of days, and I appreciate all the input. I hope every one of you, including those in the audience, have a great holiday season. I suspect we'll be very busy come January. Our next meeting is January in Richmond. I think at that I meant to ask Ms. Maxwell to give us at that time what bills have been filed so we can bring you up to date, preliminary on that, or share you what McAuliffe administration is planning. But I know this was a lot of work. I appreciate it. I told you it'd be a working board, and you have been, and I do appreciate everybody's input in that. Mr. Dyke.
Just a request. You mentioned getting an update on the bills that have been filed. Because I don't think we meet until, the 19th or something like that?
Workshop is the 19th, actually.
The 20th. No. So we can get something out in advance. We'll be happy. Ms. Maxwell, we'll try once we get it, because there's deadlines coming up, and we'll just get you. Mr. Donahue will.
Yeah, well, not only the bills, but also anything in the budget that's going to be released that we need to know about. That would be helpful.
Let's see. In the budget, the two big transportation I mentioned yesterday, the Dulles Airport,
yeah, right.
There will be $350 million ask for the Port of Virginia, an expansion of its NIT terminal. So those two big engines of economic would be. As far as surface transportation, I mentioned yesterday with Mr. Kilpatrick's presentation. We'll be asking for contingent authorization of debt on outside the Beltway, in the roughly the $1.6 to $1.7 billion range, outside the Beltway. To the extent we do not reach agreement with our outside parties, that includes TIFULA. In other words, that's just giving a shelter. We don't plan to actually, but in terms of making any of those who know how to sculpt financing stuff work. So that will be in the governor. In fact, the governor was having a press conference this morning on the details of his budget. But I think, in terms of Mr. Donahue, was there anything else in the budget? Nick, anything else in the budget, transportation wise?
I think there'll be a few small cleanup policy things. Those
Legislation. We probably will work with. Representatives of the legislature, the governor has asked me on tolling, whether that's fees related to policies. I think that's one of the things I mentioned. We really believe, tolling interstates without a capacity should not happen. It needs to be a free alternative, so we'll be looking at things in that regard. I know all the agencies have some stuff that they go through in cleaning up, but don't see any real legislative big lifts in terms of policy. Now, having said that, that's all our friends in the legislature. They may have different ideas, and we'll report that to you as we go forward in that. So,
thank you.
In that, we're really down to executing, trying to get these projects underway. I think y'all's points about continued oversight, I think that is a big part of this job, of this board, is oversight, or what we're doing, getting the results that Mr. Garzinski spoke about and others as we go through, not just this project here in Northern Virginia, but all over the state. So,
thank you.
Okay, well, everybody have a great holiday season, safe travels back, and if I don't see you, we'll see you in January. We're adjourned. Thank you.